Okay, so let us begin. We're Parshas Shmos, and the beginning of a new Sefer, Parshas Sefer. Want to acknowledge our sponsors, Jake and Karen Abelevitz, in for the lunch and the learning, all of the schus of Jake's parents, Eliel Ben Abba and Leah Bas Abraham. So I want to do a few sort of, sometimes I look at the parsha and try to give a big theme that can incorporate the whole parsha. What I'd like to do today is look at a few sort of smaller, more limited ideas focused on a few psukim. So let us begin with the beginning of Shmos. And not all the way at the beginning. You know, we have a few different storylines that go on in the Parsha. We have the introduction, we have Moshe in Mitzrayim, we have Moshe leaving Mitzrayim, and then we going to Yisrael, and then we have Moshe meeting God at the bush, at the burning bush. And that's what I want to focus in on today. So let's find the Pasuk in Parak. Perek Beis. Perek Gimel. Let's start with Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph. Umosha haya ro'eh es tzon Yisrael kosno. One second. Yeah, we're going to do this one first. Okay. Umosha haya ro'eh es tzon Yisrael kosno, kohen v'yan. Moshe was watching the sheep, as shepherding his sheep, by Inhagasa Tzon Achara Midbar, and he led them across the wilderness, by Elohar Elohim, Choreva, and he came to the Mount of God in Choreb, by Yera Malach Hashem Elav Elabai Seish Mito Chasne, and an angel of God, Posit Beis Parakimel. And an angel of God appears The labatesh is not just a fire; it is a flame, a flaming fire. Labatesh mitochasne from the bush. So we have our bush and our fire. Bayar, and Moshe sees it. Yine hasne boer ba'esh, v'hasne inenu ukal. And behold, the bush, the sne, the thistle was burning, and fire v'hasne inenu ukal, but it. Although it was burning, although it was flammable, it was not being consumed. Omer Moshe says, Asura na ve'er'eh, esamare ha-gadol, and he says, let me turn and see this amazing sight. Madua lo yivar hasna, why the bush shall not burn. Ayar Hashem kisar v'reos, God saw that Moshe looked. But he cried, Elav Elohim, Mitoch Hasna, Vayomer Moshe, Vayomer Hineni, and he calls out to Moshe, and Moshe responds. So, in our conception of this story, I think I'm not sure if you've ever asked the question. If you have, I'd be curious to hear your answers. Why is it when, I don't say it this way, Hashem appears to Abraham in a dream, right? And Hashem speaks to Abraham. Hashem, speaks to Yaakov. Hashem speaks to Moshe. Moshe is the first one that when he confronts Hashem, when he encounters Hashem, the Torah tells us that he encounters Hashem through this intermediary type of experience, right? If we think back to Abraham, God calls out. Let's go back to Lech Lecha, the first pasuk in Lech Lecha. What does the first pasuk in Lech Lecha say? Yeah, but what does it say before Lech Lecha in the Eretz? Thank you. How does that pasuk begin, Morty? Vayomer Hashem el Avraham, and God spoke to Abraham. And he told him, go forth from this land. It's just a direct communication. However, whatever that communication was, It was a direct communication. But when it comes to Moshe, the Torah tells us that Hashem appeared to Moshe through this, I don't want to call it an intermediary, but through a medium. You know, whatever direct communication means between God and Avraham, between God and many of the Avos, right, so Hashem spoke to them. But over here, you have Hashem speaking to Moshe, mitoch hasneh. And my question is, what is the significance of that? What is the meaning of that? Yeah?
I just had a thought. When it says by Yomar Hashem Avraham, it sort of suggested that there was a relationship before, and God said.
Right, even though we don't have any...
But it starts like the middle of something. There's no introduction.
Right.
Here, this is an introduction.
Right. Right. So there's no indication of Hashem having an introduction with Avraham. You know, the rabbis tell us that Avraham had a cognizance, a realization of the existence of Hashem, but we don't have this, you know, introductory experience. The same thing with Yaakov. Same thing with Adam HaRishon. Right. You don't have this. You know, God appears and then, when Yaakov awakens from the dream and it says, Achenu da davar, now I realize that this is Makom Hashem, Mizeh Shara Shamayim, he has this realization that God is there. It's still, you know, his encounter with Hashem is encountering Hashem. It's not encountering a burning bush and then divining
I see that it's not just him, Hashem's voice, which he does eventually, but it seems to be a demonstration of a miracle, almost a demonstration of power, even before he hears the voice and then, you know, gets his attention. There's something beyond.
Okay, so Hashem appears to Moshe, and it's not even so much about Hashem speaking to him, but it's about this miraculous, wondrous experience, right?
That's part one.
Part one and part two. Yeah.
So it's kind of like a test because Hashem notices that Moshe turns aside. Now Moshe could have not noticed this bush that it wasn't consumed. I think a certain kind of person that noticed. It's not being consumed, that he had to take notice of it and to see what it was about. So that was kind of the test for Moshe to see that he was going to be the right kind of person for the task that Hashem had in mind.
Okay. What Marjorie is saying is that this was, in a certain sense, a test of Moshe. When Hashem speaks to Avraham, that's not a test. He does have tests. But as you correctly point out, it seems like it's in the middle of a discussion. So in other words, Avraham seems to have already, you know, sort of accepted or understood the existence of Hashem, right, whereby Moshe Rabbeinu is sort of getting his
indoctrination.
And that itself is meant to be a test. This encounter with Hashem. Because if it were not a test, then we just have the direct communication. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. God spoke to Moshe. He says, behold, I'm taking you out. I need you to go on this mission and take the Jews out of Egypt. So it seems, therefore, that somehow this the encounter itself is a test. And if you look at Pasuk 3, Pasuk 4, Pasuk 4 says, simple pshat in the Pasuk. Vayar Hashem kisar lirot. God saw that Moshe turned to observe. Right? That Moshe was sar lirot. That he turned to observe. In other words, it wasn't business as usual. He wasn't, he was open and able to see that which was before him. And that is something which is not so easy for people to sometimes see. That which is right in front of your face. The ability to discern and perceive the supernatural, the phenomenal, in the context of what is everyday experience, that is a tremendous capability. And so from one perspective, you could argue that this was a test to Moshe to see if Moshe could go beyond the mundane and see the miraculous, even in the mundane. And not that this itself was mundane, but you know, many people can walk by a miraculous event and not notice it.
Right.
I'm sure we see it in our own lives. People do it. You know, people do it all the time. Witness anybody who has ever who's ever had the joy of acknowledging that a child has been born in the world. And if we don't faint at that knowledge, then on some level we are accepting this phenomenal, amazing, wondrous experience as something which is just, you know, which is every day, but which it is, but it's not. You know, it is both, and that's sort of the challenge. So Moshe, sort of to be the leader of Klal Yisrael, who is going to bring them into a spiritual awakening. Lech Hashlacha, I'm going to send you on this journey, not simply to redeem the Jewish people from physical bondage, but to help them to a spiritual awakening. You need somebody that is able to guide them to be able to see beyond the, you know, beyond the three-dimensional plane. Okay, so that's one way of looking. Another way of looking at it, I saw somebody said that Moshe Rabbeinu was sadly wrote that God saw that he turned to look. What was Moshe turning from? In other words, our first explanation was he was turning towards to see something amazing. But what was he turning from? What was he in the midst of doing?
Grazing the sheep.
Right, he was grazing the sheep. Right? In other words,
something mundane.
Not just something mundane, but you know, yeah.
Well, he was taking care of them. And doesn't he take care of Bnei Israel? But we have to tell him that a certain shepherd like quality.
Right, yes. It's a shepherd like quality. And certainly Chazal's, the famous story, which a lot of people think is actually in the Chumash, but it's not, that a sheep runs away from Moshe, and Moshe is concerned about every sheep in the flock, so he runs after the sheep to take care of it, and he picks it up, and that's where Hashem realizes that Moshe is so concerned about every single every single sheep. This is the right person to lead Klal Yisrael. So yes, Chazal pick up on that, on the notion of what he was doing, and they flush it out with that beautiful story. However, these weren't Moshe's sheep, right? Moshe was working really for Yisrael. Right? What is it? It says, "Vayinhag Moshe ayaro es tzon Yisrael chosno." Chapter 3, pasuk 1. Moshe was shepherding the sheep, the flock of his, the sheep of his father-in-law, Yisro. Vayinhag es hatzon achar midbar, and he led them across the wilderness. So Moshe Rabbeinu was really, he was at work. Right? He was at a job. He was making a living. Yeah, he was taking care of his parnasa. And Moshe Rabbeinu had, and this was a test, are you able to pick your head up from the overwhelming pressure of making the parnasa, of working, to be able to see what needs to be seen? And so Moshe Rabbeinu, while even though he was at work, even though he was under the burden of making his living, right? He was it was his job. He was taking care of the sheep. This is what he had to do. He was still able to sar lirot. So Hashem says, "Vayar." Pasuk says, "Vayar Hashem." God saw. He sar lirot. He was able to turn. There are two ways to understand that kisar lirot. He was able to turn towards to be able to see something magnificent, even though he's just involved in something very mundane. And the other is that he was able to pull himself away from the overwhelming responsibilities of the of material. Of material support in order to be able to see the spiritual encounter, and he says, "Madua lo yivar hasne." This is mar'eh hagadol, and when Hashem sees that, Hashem then calls out. Okay, so two little points here, but I want to take this one step further, and that is. The imagery here of the burning bush. Hashem could have appeared to Moshe in any way that was not directly speaking, in order to accomplish the same goals that we just outlined. Moshe being able to see the spiritual out of the mundane, to draw himself away from the Parnassa, to be able to see this spiritual plane. Moshe Rabbeinu having the wherewithal, all that well and good. But this is a particular way that Hashem is encountering Moshe Rabbeinu. What is the imagery here of the burning bush? What is that imagery?
It means Hashem is humble because people were in bondage, Israel was in bondage, and he wanted them to know he was with them in their sorrows.
Okay, so. So you're suggesting that Hashem appearing to Moshe in the burning bush is expressing a sense of humility to the Jewish people who didn't see that experience. In other words, what you're saying, I hear what you're saying, but the challenge with that is that although the reader could see that for future generations, and maybe that's what is meaningful, but certainly for Klal Yisrael at the time, they certainly aren't seeing that. Moshe is seeing. Okay, yeah.
Symbolic of God's strength is fire. For example, we also have when in Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have also when Kadosh Baruch has the makos, you have fire and water mixed together. Huh. So you have here a mixture of fire and land, fire and land coming together, symbolic of the strength of the miracle of God.
Okay, alright, so Hashem is symbolized, it expresses itself through fire, which is a very powerful thing in the world, and we see it with the destruction of stone, we see it with later on with the Makos, so we see God expressed in fire. Okay, right. Take a look at the sheet that I gave you, number one. This is a collection of some of Farshim. Rabbi Mimin HaRishonim Kosvu. Many of the sages write, of the commentators write, Shasne Romez Li Israel, the Ha'esh, he Mashal of Mitzrayim. Now, this wasn't just a haphazard way of encountering Moshe, but the Sne, the bush, is to reminiscent of B'nai Israel, Jewish people. The Ha'esh, Mashal of Mitzrayim. And the fire is meant to convey an image of Egypt. And Hashem speaking out of that, the fact that the bush is not consumed, nirmaz implies, just as the fire does not consume the bush, so too, the enemies of the Jewish people will not be able to consume the Jewish people. So Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to go on this journey, you're going to redeem the Jewish people, and form follows function, or function follows form. I'm not sure which way it goes here. But the form here is a burning bush. And the function that Moshe is meant to take out of this experience is to go, in fact, and have the Amuna, that in fact the Jewish people will not be consumed by this terrible experience. And then for future generations, the readers also pick up on this for generations after, that Klal Yisrael as a whole, regardless, will not be consumed by the Umos HaOlam. Yeah.
Now, but it's not foretelling something for the future, but it's also saying God will control what would normally be the fire that would consume them, what would normally be the enemy that would consume them. Hashem will prevent that. That's what it seems to me.
Okay, so that if the fire will not consume the Jewish people. So I think you have to say that sort of as a whole, because on an individual level, many people were in fact consumed, many people were killed. But B'nai Israel as a whole remain the sort of the body politic of B'nai Israel as a whole remains pristine and unblemished. What?
That's true, pristine and
Well, I don't mean spiritually, Christina. I mean that we continue as a people. There, you know, the Jewish people march on. Okay, so not surprisingly, read a little further with me. Hosef HaRalbag, here Ralbag adds, Shehal Havahi Remez L'Chose Katsara, the flame and fire is a symbol of the strength, the power of the tzaras. Shehayu by Yisrael, that Bnei Yisrael were suffering under. Shayarai shetichla osam kimo shehala hava mechala et asneh, that should have consumed them. Umalach Hashem hu remez lashgachas Hashem sheyatzilem shelo yivaru v'yizkilu b'va'esh. And the Malach Hashem is basically making the point that God's divine presence and divine intervention will protect the Jewish people. So all that is wrapped up in this image of the burning bush. Two. So not surprisingly, there's another view, not just another view, but Ulam Yeshikasu Sheyisrael Nimshul Leish, an opposite view. The Jewish people are the fire. Bnei Yisrael is the fire, right? Okay, and the Umos Haolam Nimshul Lekotzim. And the nations of the world, amongst whom the Jewish people dwell, they are the thorns of this bush. Uvemarezeh, and in this image, Mirmaz Shiyu Yisrael Beina Umos Lo Yichlo Osam. The Jewish people will exist within the nations of the world, not separate from, and they will not be consumed. They will not be destroyed. Umos Lo Yichbu Es Eish Yisrael. And the nations of the world, amongst whom the Jews will be living, will not be able to extinguish the fire. So, in the first case, fire is destructive, and Bnei Yisrael are the bush that are not being destroyed. In the second way of looking at the image, Bnei Yisrael have the passion and passion of fire and strength of fire that the nations of the world will not be able to extinguish. So in the image number two, fire is not destructive. The fire is a symbol of power and strength, like a little bit like you said before, Morty. Rabbeinu B'chaya Kasa, number three. Rabbeinu B'chaya writes, Shehasnehu mashal para. Okay? The sneh, the bush, is para. Okay? Bush is para. V'ha'eshi mashal l'makos shi'avo'u ala. And the fire is the destructive plagues, the makos, that Hashem is going to bring upon Paro. The nirmaz Moshe va'eshi mashal makos shiavo alav. The nirmaz Moshe she'asir Hakadosh Baruch Hu l'hakshos es libo shel Paro shel yichne mipnei hamakos kishem she'asne einenu ukal mipnei ha'esh. And do the plagues destroy Paro? Yes, they do. So how does this image play itself out? So Rabbi Chaya says that although the plagues should make Paro give me a word here to submit
to accede
Paro will not. Paro's heart will be hardened. And Paro will continue to be Paro despite living with the pain of the fire. Right? So the plagues will come and the plagues will come and Paro will not submit. And in that sense, it's like Isna, which is Einenu Ukal. So in the first version, the bush is Bnei Yisrael that will not be destroyed. That's a positive thing. In the second, Bnei Yisrael is the fire that will not be extinguished. That's also positive. In the third, the fire represents the plagues, which have the power to what do you call it when you try to make a person submit and then
yield.
Okay, what was the word?
No, it's to break him down.
Yeah, to break him down, to yield. Right, power will not bend, power will not be broken. Right, and he's going to live with all that pain and suffering, just in order to be able to feed his anger and his hatred towards Klal Yisrael. In other words, he will cut off his nose despite his face. And over here, the Malach Hashem represents the Jewish the merit of the righteous ones, in whose merit Bnei Israel will be saved. So again, all of this, when Moshe is sar lirot, when Moshe pauses to see and looks, what he's looking at is not just an amazing phenomenon, but there are several layers to it. And maybe it's all of these. Maybe it's not one. Maybe it's multiple layers. And in order to be a leader of Klal Yisrael, you have to be able to see multiple layers in order to be able to lead. The Abarbanel writes, Shakodesh Baruch Hu Bir LeMoshe Pitaron HaMareh. Hashem himself told Moshe. Read the Psukim. Hashem told Moshe what is the meaning of this imagery. Shamar Lo, God says, Ra'o Ra'isi Asami Ami. I've seen my downtrodden nation. And I will go down to save them. The bush is in fact a symbol of the downtrodden state of Bnei Yisrael. Very humble position. The downtrodden state. They are downtrodden. They are humble. And I don't mean that they're humble, because they're not arrogant. In other words, their situation has made them lowly and humble, not in a good way. Because of their low state, they are like this little bush. And the fire represents their cries of pain and suffering. And it is those cries and pain and suffering, and just as this bush is not destroyed, as a consequence of their crying, it will indeed again, leading to redemption. So this iconic image that we all know of the burning bush, it's worthwhile, say the Mefarshim, to step back for a moment and ask ourselves the question, why is it a burning bush? What is the burning bush meant to represent? So here we have four different views. And maybe, as I said before, when Moshe steps back, it's about Moshe being able to see not one or the other, but maybe all of these, be able to see a textured layer, multi-layer, and that's what is necessary to be a leader of Klal Yisrael. Okay, so...
Maybe that's why we have the Lashon of Erech and Vayar. Yeah. When you see this, the sea is a great complex to look. You're focusing in. There's a depth with two eyes. There's greater depth than one eye. The whole concept of seeing is seeing something that's deeper than just what's in front of you.
Right. And I think ultimately, as Moshe, I agree with you. And I think ultimately, as Moshe is the standard bearer of Klal Yisrael, the introduction and the genesis of his leadership of Klal Yisrael was all about being able to stop and see Hashkachas Hashem. And that is being modeled here in Moshe as the leader, and that's the challenge that we have, which is, as we mentioned before, somewhat, sometimes hard to be able to see the hand of Hashem in the natural world. Okay, so let's put any comments on this? Any? All right. So I want to go to another wondrous moment in the Parsha. And that is, after Hashem tells Moshe, look, you're going to be the leader of the Jewish people, I have a plan, I have a mission for you. And Moshe responds, thanks, but no thanks. So what's Moshe Rabbeinu's first pushback? You can read the psukim together in the Chumash. Hashem says to him, take off your shoes, Yashala. I'm the God of your forefathers, and I'm going to save the Jewish people, and you're going to help me. And Pasuk 11, Moshe responds to Paro, to Hashem. What is Moshe's response to Hashem? What?
Mi Anochi.
Who am I? I'm a nobody, or whatever I am, I'm not, seem to not to be, not to be worthy for this. Okay? Mi anochi keilecha al paro, who am I that I shall go to Paro? Ayomer, and Hashem says, don't worry, I will be with you. Pasuk 13, Moshe responds again. What's Moshe's second pushback? Pasuk 13. So he says, if I go, Hinei Anochi Baal El Bnei Yisrael, I'm going to come to the Jewish people, and I'm going to say, the God of Hashem sent me, and they're going to say, who, you know, what's his name? Ma'omar, what am I going to say to them? What am I going to say to them? In other words, pushback number two is, in essence, they're going to challenge me, and really, what do I possibly know that I can, at least on a pshat level, what do I possibly know that I could say to convince them? So Hashem says, I'll tell you what to say to convince them. Pasuk 15, he demurs yet a third, he demur, not third, 15. Where does it, is third? No, so that's the response. Yom Kippur Moshe, Asafta, his third pushback. Chapter 4, Pasuk 1. So Hashem, you know, gives him everything that he needs, all the tools. And Vayan Moshe, chapter 4, Pasuk 1. What does he say? Vayan Moshe. At the end of the day, Vahem lo yaminu li. They're not going to believe me. The people just are not going to believe me. So,
couldn't he say that I saw a miracle with the burning bush? Couldn't he tell them about that?
Tell him anything he wants. He's arguing, he's saying, Vehem lo, Vayan Moshe, Vehem lo yaminu li, Velo yishmu, they're not going to believe me, and they're not going to listen to me. Ki amru lo nirai lech Hashem. They will challenge me and they'll say, you know, lots of people show up at Penn Station saying they've spoken to God. Maybe you're just a guy at Penn Station, right? So that's Moshe's, you know, bottom line. They're not going to believe me. Yeah.
At the end of Yosef says to the brothers, uses the term bakad bakadti.
Right.
And in the conversation of the big cross, that when the time comes, those exact words are going to be
right. Right, so that's how the, you know, the rabbis understand this given to, at least that pasuk that Hashem they're going to say mashmo what will I respond and yes
right? but it doesn't even come into play here. That's like so subtle, it doesn't even
right come so into play. At the end of the day, Moshe is pushing back for one reason or another, and each one of these has an answer to it. What's Hashem's answer to this last one? They're not going to believe me. So what does Hashem say? How is Hashem going to help him with that challenge?
Okay.
All right, so Hashem says to Moshe, they're not going to believe you. I'll help you with that too. Number one, I'm going to give you the sign of the staff turning into a snake. Right?
Does anyone ever mention that the people hear those words but not to cavity and it has an effect on them? But in any commentary?
Let's leave that aside for now. So he says the staff. What's the second sign that Hashem offers Moshe? Right, the hand with the leprosy.
Yeah.
Leprosy on the hand. And then Hashem says, and if they don't believe you with those two, I have a third one. What's the third one? I should have put that one in red.
The water and
the river. Okay. The water
river.
Turning
the river.
To blood. Okay. One, two, three. So this is a very, very interesting dialogue here between Hashem and Moshe. What exactly is Hashem really saying here to Moshe? Hashem knows if they're going to believe him or not. Like, what's going on? And if they don't believe, he says, fine, I'll give you a staff. If they don't believe that, I'll give you leprosy. If they don't believe that, I'll give you the water and the blood. So I have two questions. Number one, what's the idea of these multiple signs? And number two, what is it about the water that's going to be the one that apparently clinches it, right? If they don't believe that, they'll believe this. If they don't believe that, they'll believe this. What's it about the water and the blood that's going to ultimately clinch it?
Water is life.
What?
Water is life.
And therefore, why is this a more powerful sign that will convince them over one... Okay, but why is that going to be more convincing?
Wasn't it their god?
So the water from the Nile was considered some type of deity, right? And so on one level, you could say that this is going right to the crux of it. If the Nile, if the water is somehow is divine. In the Egyptian conception that by turning the water into blood, you're basically subverting their whole belief system. And Bnei Yisrael had, at that time, really succumbed to much of the Egyptian beliefs. Okay, so that's one possibility. But let's go. What about the staff and the leprosy? So one question is, the second question was, why do we need the? Why is the third one going to be more powerful? And the first question is, what's the idea here of these? Of these double signs. So let's just take a look at some of the Mefarshim here. Take a look at on page, the next page. It's page number 88. I'm sorry, 85.
1 and 2?
Yeah. Okay. So he says the following over here. The Ralbag writes the following. Im yomru sha'os rishonasa b'mikre, then rachok hadavar sheshnei osos yasu b'mikre. So Ralbag says it's not really so much about the first and the second. It's just about having any two. Because the idea is, the idea here is to coincidence, to remove the idea that there's some type of coincidence here. One thing could just be happenstance, but twice already is already somewhat of a pattern. Although my 10th grade teacher, my 10th grade English teacher said that once is a happenstance, twice is a coincidence, and three times is a pattern. So maybe that's why we have three, because it's not just happenstance, and it's not just coincidence. And therefore, he says, Rachel Kagdavar Shnei Osos. But we'll say it from another perspective. We'll use a little black humor here, a little dark humor here. Somebody once said, how can you make sure that a person goes on a plane that there isn't some type of bomb on the plane? And the answer is, bring your own bomb on board. Why? Because the statistical possibility of there being one bomb on board is very, very slim. The statistical possibility of having two bombs on the plane is almost none. So if you want to reduce so bring your own bomb on board. So, it's a little black humor there, a little dark humor. But in other words, the possibility of there having two of these is so slim to none, there must be some type of real sign from God. All right, that's what the Ralbag says. Reb Avram ben Arambam, who is the son of the Rambam, says the following: Sha'af shemi she'eno ma'amin ba'os echad lo yamin gam b'shnayim. If I bring you one sign and you don't believe it, you're not believing a second sign, right? I mean, really, what's a staff turning into a snake? Is that so much different than a hand to turning into leprosy? I mean, it is different, but is, you know, if a guy doesn't believe this, really what's going to make him believe that? If you told me, I don't know, if the staff is not turns into a snake, then I will stop the sun and, you know, the water will flow up and, you know, I mean, like, crazy things. But, you know, to get a little leprosy on the hand is, I don't think, going to be much more compelling than the snake turning into a staff turning into a snake. So Rav Raman ben Arambam says the following. Mikol makom, says, Kevan she'asidim chartumei paro lahotzi la'az al ha'os, v'la'asos gam heim kamohu, la'kein nitzrach ribui osos kedei lesalek et hasvekot me'al nevuas Moshe. So Rav Avraham ben Arambam says, it's not really about one, two, it's about having a preponderance of these things, so that way later on, when the Chartumim turn around and they try to do the same thing, you know, that that there is some efficacy that is given to this. Now the Chartumim don't do the leprosy in the hand, right? What?
No.
Right, so they don't replicate that. So maybe that's what he's saying, he's just trying to do stuff that the Chartumim, in order to. So it's not really about making the people believe now, right? So the Heim Lo Yaminu is not about now. It's about when the Chartumim come along and try to replicate stuff, then they'll have stuff that's not replicable. That's what the Rambam says. The Chizkuni, take a look at the bottom of the page here. Chizkuni writes, Rashi, I didn't underline it for you. But it's the next paragraph. Rashi Kosav, Mishatomer lahem bishvilchem likiti shesiparti alechem lashon hara yaminu lach shekvar regilim heim shaharotzim lahara lahem lokim binegaim kigon parav avimelech bishvil sara. So he says the following. Leprosy on the hand is significantly different than the staff of the snake. And there's most people will go with the staff on the snake. But if that doesn't work, then there is another possibility here. That other possibility is the leprosy on the hand. And the reason why that's more compelling for those who are still skeptical after the staff on the snake is because when Moshe gets the leprosy, he's going to also explain to them what that's about. He's going to say, Bishvilchem likiti al shesiparti alechem lashon hara. I got this leprosy because we have a tradition that even the Jewish people then had a tradition about, that somebody who engages in really bad behavior like this will be stricken with leprosy by God. Moshe spoke lashon hara about the Jewish people, that he said, v'heim lo yaminu, they're not going to believe me. He spoke lashon hara about them. So Rashi says that he will take this out and say, look, here it is, the tradition that somebody speaks Lashon Hara, somebody who does terrible things, God, not the Egyptian God, the God of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, will smite them with leprosy. And in fact, they have the tradition of Avraham and Avimelech, etc., but, you know, beforehand. So Rashi says, that's what's going to go on here. And that's how this Rashi is usually understood. Shekvar lamdu bekach shamizdag v'nlhara lahem lokim v'negayim kigon paro v'avimelech b'shvil sara. Just like what happened with Avimelech and Paro and Avimelech and Sara, you know, all those years earlier who was smitten. But I'd like to read this Rashi a little differently. Rashi says, Mishetomar lahem, you will tell them, b'shvilchem likiti. On your account, I have been smitten. In other words, not talking about Lashon Hara per se, but you know, look at the suffering that I'm going through for you. Doesn't that count for something? You know, I'm not doing this for self-aggrandizement. I'm not doing this for, so the fact that I am being that I am losing on this deal because I have this leper hand, that should count for something. That should give you a sense of confidence in me. All right. Lastly, over here. Lastly, flip the page. We have the Abarbanel.
Okay. So the Abarbanel says a couple of things here. Abarbanel says, number one, Abarbanel Bier. Sheha'ot HaRishon, it's on page 86, right-hand side, about five lines down by the little number 113, page 86, right-hand side, right-hand column. Abarbanel Bier, Alpi Darko, the Abarbanel explained, Sheha'os HaRishon, Hu Remez Leonesh Paro. The first sign that Moshe did, that is a remez. It represents the punishment that Paro was going to get. Sheyihi Ale'etz Yavesh, he will be like a dry stick. The Ha'ot HaSheni, Hu Remez, is a foreshadowing, Sheyashuvu Yisrael B'tshuva, that the Jewish people will return to Hashem. Ulekach, and therefore, afim lo yaminu la'ot harishon sheparo ye'anesh, even if they don't believe the first prophecy here that Paro is going to be punished, nevertheless, she'enam ru'uyim she'yaset she'yomru, they will say, even if we want to believe you, we are not worthy of it. We are not worthy of such a miracle to happen. And therefore, Yaminu Leota Acharon, let the Jewish people believe the second oat. And the second oat of the white hand, right? Sheyashuvu al Hashem v'yoshiem, that God will, that they will return to Hashem, and God will in fact save them. Right? Vayomer Hashem, Hashem says, put your hand in thing and the tzaras will come out, put your hand in thing and and you will be healed. In other words, even if there was a sin, there is tshuva. So even if you don't believe that Paro is going to be punished, believe in yourselves. Believe in yourselves that tshuva is possible and tshuva is capable. The first one is to give a sign that God sent Moshe. And he can do this wondrous thing, creating a snake out of a staff. V'ha'ot ha'sheni, and the second one is that he'll be healed. She'afim lo yaminu lecha she'ashem shalachecha, yaminu lecha she'ashem yigalem ki kvar muvtachim kvar me'avoseim. It's really the same idea with a slight variation. Even if you don't believe in this, believe in yourselves. Believe in your capability. Believe in what you can possibly do. All right, so we asked a question. What is it that these multiple signs are going to accomplish? So, right, we have a few different ideas of what these signs will accomplish. But it doesn't answer the final question, which is, what about the water and the blood? So, Chippy said, maybe it's because the water represents their God, and, you know, you're basically killing their God by turning it into blood. So I want you to take a look at this very beautiful thought, your last page from Rabbi Shimon Schwab. Okay. So this was not written by Rabbi Schwab, but by one of his students, recounting an idea of Rabbi Schwab. So he writes the following. He says that in Judaism, often you need three to create an established pattern. But when on the bottom of the page here, when Moses presented himself as the Redeemer of Bnei Israel, he was not dealing with monetary issues, where creating a pattern of three is necessary, and therefore two signs should have sufficed to show the people that he was indeed a shaliach, a messenger of Hashem. In other words, Rabbi Schwab sort of looking at this from putting a halachic lens on, he's saying, listen, let's look at this through the halachic perspective. Two is necessary to create general patterns. When you're talking about monetary law, you need three to create a pattern, a chazakah. So if this was not a monetary issue, which it wasn't, why, looking at it through the halachic universe, did God demand, did God provide Moshe three signs? Two should have sufficed. So he says the following. You've misunderstood. There are not three signs here. there are two signs and a point and a warning. The answer is that the third sign is not a sign at all. It was a warning. A pattern had been established after two times. Moshe proved himself to be the messenger of Hashem. Those who refused to believe were influenced by their assimilation into Egyptian culture. You know, at some point, it doesn't make a difference what you tell people. People believe what they want to believe. I remember my mother told me about a great uncle of mine that came to the United States in the 1930s and was a lawyer in Berlin, or maybe in Poland, maybe in Warsaw. And he came back and he said, life in America is too tough. You know, he was a floor washer in America. So he went back to Europe and he was killed. He says, those who refused to believe were influenced by their assimilation into Egyptian culture. They viewed themselves as Egyptian. They did not want to leave Egypt. The third sign focused on this reluctance to leave. The sign of the water of the river turning to blood was not given to show that Moshe was the Redeemer. Number three is not a sign, but rather that Moshe was the Redeemer, but rather as a harbinger of punishment, a warning of death. Blood is a sign of retribution. The Jews who refused to believe that Moshe Rabbeinu would redeem them wanted to remain in Egypt. Those Jews would die during the plague of Choshech. In the pitch dark, the Egyptians would not see their death. Hashem gave Moshe the third sign as a warning to the Jews. If you do not accept Moshe as Hashem's messenger, then you will die in Choshech. This is not about giving him a sign. Signs are over. You don't want to believe that, you don't want to believe that. But I'm giving you now a warning. Forewarned is for something? Forearmed is for whatever. Forewarned is forearmed. But then here, there's an additional message to the third sign. Again, it's not a sign. The Jews were being told, how can you possibly want to remain in Egypt? Look at this country. The very water that you drink from the Nile contains the blood of Jewish infants. This isn't Egypt, you know, when Yaakov was alive. This isn't Egypt after Yaakov was alive and dead and Yosef was still alive. This wasn't Egypt then. This is Egypt after decades and decades and decades of persecution and death and suffering. Here is where you want to remain? The water is saturated with Jewish blood. How can you even think of remaining in this place? So, you don't believe me. Fine, don't believe me. But at least make an effort to come. Don't believe me. I'm telling you to believe me. What I'm saying is, even if you don't believe me, what do you want to stay here for? And if you do believe me, you still want to stay. There are those who still want to stay. And I'm saying, why? The water is blood. Rabbi Schwab then told us that in the city of Frankfurt, Germany, this is talking about in the late 1960s, a glatt kosher restaurant had recently opened to meet the needs of the frum yidden. He asked, how can a frum person even think of returning to Germany? It's a country in which the very soil is saturated with Jewish blood. 1/3 of the entire Jewish population in the Holocaust and 95% of the Talmidei Chachamim and Gedolim perished. I don't know if that's an exact statistic or not, but he's making a point. The very land that one walks on is full of Jewish blood. How can one entertain the idea of returning to such a country? Now, Rabbi Schwab is from Frankfurt, from the bowels of Nazi Germany. So, you know, whether you have to take his mussar to the nth degree and say that nobody should go, yes, no, maybe it's a debate. But see where he's coming from. And this is what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to the Jewish people. Believe, don't believe. Even if you believe, there are people that want to stay. Because there's like a certain cognitive dissonance that we allow ourselves. And what Rabbi Schwab is saying, what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, is enough with the cognitive dissonance. See it for what it is. You have to be somewhere, be there. But to choose to remain on bloody soil, on bloody water, after decades and centuries of death and destruction in Egypt, fill in the country of your choice in more modern times? That, he asks, is a rhetorical question. And so, Behem lo yaminu li, they say, Hashem, Moshe says, they won't believe me. And Hashem says, fine, I'll give you one sign. If that sign doesn't work, I'll give you a second sign. If that sign doesn't work, and even if they do, you're still going to have people. And that, you give them this warning. Forewarned is forearmed. But more than being forearmed is a realization. Wake up and see where you are. And then ask yourself to the question, do you really want to stay? And with that, we'll pause. Yeah.